Golf Smarter Premium number 485, published on April 21, 2015. How you or your child can get into a college golf program with Andy Walker.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Andy.
Thanks for having me, Fred. I appreciate it, buddy.
Hey, it's great to have you on. And for those of you who have not joined us, we are actually broadcasting this live on Periscope so that we have some people watching, hopefully hearing both of our sides of our conversation, and they can submit questions. We've already gotten one question in. I'm going to actually go right to the question.
Okay.
And then I need to get an update of what's going on with you. We haven't talked to you in about a year.
Yep.
And I want to talk to you. Did you get a chance to watch the Masters? I know you've been really busy with your teams.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was a guy who won the Masters this year that could have been on your team.
Incredible, huh?
It's amazing. But we'll get to that later. I want to go right to the first question that we got. Worthy winner. Absolutely. Right to the question that we got on Periscope, which is, how do I overcome nerves in golf?
Great question. You know what? Nerves are kind of a self-induced feeling. And so when we talk about nerves, it means our mind is in a place other than where it should be. So if we're thinking about nerves, we're thinking about the outcome of a particular topic. Say if we're on the 18th hole of a tournament and we're really nervous because the consequences of winning could be really big. I'm sure Jordan had a lot of nerves coming down the stretch this week. But what great players do is they focus on something instead of letting the nerves and the thoughts of what if and what could be overcome us. If we have a good focus on and what I like to call process, you know, we get to thinking about where we want to hit the golf shot, how we're going to do it, you know, what it's going to feel like, and kind of seeing the result and doing a lot of the mental imagery. Then we forget about the what ifs. So our nerves going to be there always. But the thing is, we can use them to our advantage. Nerves can either help us or hurt us. So one thing that I heard is the last thought we have before we hit a golf shot is either going to enhance or hurt what we're trying to accomplish with that golf shot. So having nerves is a good thing. Being able to embrace them and get refocused on what we want to have happen when we hit the golf shot or play the hole or what we're trying to accomplish on the golf course at that time is what's going to really separate us from failing in that time or being very successful at that same time.
Are first tee jitters similar to 18th hole jitters? Or do they manifest themselves differently? Or is it all about you have to be in the moment and forget about everything else?
I don't know if they're much different. I know the first tee jitters are because the unknown, we haven't hit any golf shots yet in competition for the day. So we want to make sure that we're still that guy that we were on the range or we are every day. I know when I was playing for a living, the reason why I used to practice so hard was because I was scared every day I was going to wake up and not be as good as I was the last day. And so that first shot of the day was always like, okay, I'm still me, right? Someone else didn't creep into my body overnight and turn into something else. And I hear a lot of the same thing from a lot of tour players. On 18 as well is, you know, we start thinking about the outcome of what could happen in the situation. And so we lose some of the process. Rory McIlroy, when he won the British, said last year something very good about two words that he worked on during the whole week. And he said it before the tournament. So in essence, he was kind of predicting that he was going to win and there was going to be two reasons why. And he used the word process and he used the word spot. And I am huge on process, and process goes into so deep, so many things of how we prepare to hit a golf shot, how we manage our emotions, what we're thinking about and why, and then going ahead and hitting the golf shot and executing. And then spot went into while he was putting, he was focusing on a spot. So if I'm focused on something, you know, we can't think about two or three different things at one time. So if I'm, you know, focusing on my rhythm or if I'm focusing on a target in the background or a specific swing key, I can't be thinking about the nerves in the situation at hand at the same time.
We've talked so often about process and outcome,
mm-hmm.
right? We even did a show once. There was a teacher who uses NATO golf, which is NATO, not attached to outcome.
Okay.
And so many of the mental coaches that we've talked to talk about process versus outcome. I can see the sweaty palms on the first tee, you know, where your anticipation leading up to it for hours and hours, if not days, weeks, right. months, versus your knees knocking on the 18th hole on your 18th hole putt. Right. Mm-hmm. Different kind of nerves. But again, it's because you're focused on what might happen versus staying in that moment.
Exactly. And so even if we see with Jordan winning this week was unbelievable performance that really started a month ago. I mean, the kids, you know, he goes win, second win. He's been in the leader group. So the kid's been in total control of his process the whole time. But we saw on the 72nd hole of the Masters, you know, he didn't hit a very good putt at all. He was not in the moment at that time. He was giving his acceptance speech.
Yeah.
He was just like, let me cuzzle this thing up to the hole and get it in somehow.
And only the announcers at that point knew that it was a record-breaking putt. I'm sure he wasn't aware that if he makes the putt, he sets the record for the lowest score ever, right?
Yeah, subconsciously he may have known it.
Sure.
He wasn't thinking about that. He was thinking about, you know what, I'm about to win the Masters. Let me not do something stupid like power lift this thing out and have it spin down the hill to 15 feet and I leave myself a tough, you know. So his thing is, let me get this over with. Mm. And, you know, I'm sure his mind was racing. The thing is, the kid is just, I mean, that was an amazing performance this week. And so the control that he showed that he learned from last year, you know, self-admitted, he had lost control and got a little hot last year after he missed that putt on 8. You know, this year he'd missed some putts as well, but he didn't let it, you know, overcome him. He got right back into the process of what he was doing, and the result speaks for himself.
It was amazing. It was an amazing performance. He's got all parts of his game working. It was all working all weekend long. Was it a fluke performance? Not by him, but in the world of golf, because you don't, you know, I mean, how many times has somebody won by nine, you know, by being minus 18, right? On that golf course.
Right.
Was that a fluke, or are they going to have to make changes to the course so they can make it, you know, the winning score should be like in a U.S. Open. The winning should be a minus 3, right?
Yeah.
Not 20, 19.
Well, 18. You know, I wouldn't say it's a fluke. It wasn't like he wasn't trying to shoot 18 under. If he was trying to shoot even par and shot 18, I would say that it might be. I would say more than anything, I think the course setup was a little different. It was a little softer. We saw that. I heard for the first time that around the greens, the grass was cut towards the green instead of away from it, which made chipping a lot easier. You weren't always against the grain. I don't know if they did that to help out a certain someone who had some short game issues earlier this year. But you know, at the same time, I just think the conditions were conducive for low scoring this year. And so, you know, the guys took advantage of it, and there was a lot of low scores and eagles made and long irons hit really close and 3 woods that were stopping close to the hole. And, you know, so, you know, I don't think they really have to change that golf course. I mean, they've added so much length to it. It's like 7,700 yards. There's a lot of things that I think are really good with that golf course already that they don't have to touch. I mean, maybe the green's firming up a little bit more, you know, maybe cutting the grain against the green, you know, going away from the green around the greens is definitely going to change the short game landscape of that golf course, which is where all the scoring's done, is around the green there.
Hmm. It was amazing. I'm sure we'll touch on it more as we go down the conversation, but I want to get to you for a minute. Enough about Jordan Spieth. Everybody's talking about Jordan Spieth. Let's talk about Andy Walker. What's going on with you?
Wow, a lot. A lot's going on. It's been a great year.
Glad to hear.
Yeah, still coaching South Mountain Community College, number one junior college team in the country.
Is that right?
Yeah, we're number one team in the country.
What's the age group of the kids that you have playing there?
18 to 20, 21.
Okay.
So, college kids, and we're the number one junior college team in the country.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We've won every tournament this spring semester, which has been unbelievable. I don't know if that's ever been done before, but I've got a great group of guys that are playing. I also have the women's team, which is number two in our conference right now. So they've made great strides from not even really having a full team last year to become the number two team in our region on the women's side, which is pretty fun. Started up a new company called U.S. Golf Combines.
What is that? Tell me.
U.S. Golf Combines. Pretty fun. So it is the most respected and kind of intricate combine rating system in golf. So in essence, we're kind of coming up with a rating system for the game of golf. Ours is going to be targeted towards high school players that are wanting to play in college.
Okay.
So we're going to be traveling around the country. Our first one's in Dallas at Brookhaven Country Club. So for people that are aware with Dallas, Brookhaven is Jordan Spieth's course that he grew up playing with.
Very cool.
So the people that work with Jordan Spieth, Amp Fitness, I know he was talking about the guys when he gave his acceptance speech. Those guys are going to be actually doing our fitness stuff. So it's pretty neat. It was a big week for us with U.S. Golf Combines and Jordan Spieth and his whole team, because there's going to be a lot of stuff that we're going to be doing in conjunction with each other. But we're going to go around the country, and we're going to be rating high school players. So they're going to be going through a TrackMan combine. We have short game algorithms and putting algorithms that dictate proximity to hole and give you a rating, as well as makes. They're going to go out and play. We have a mental combine that we're going to be doing, Amp Fitness, which is Jordan Spieth's fitness crew, and the people that work on his body and physique are going to be doing a physical combine with us. And then we're going to put the kids' high school resumes together in appropriate format. And from there, we're going to videotape them and their interview and have a nice package for them to send out to college coaches so they can play college golf.
On the combine idea is based on combines like for football from college kids going into the pros, and you get all the scouts together. That's the concept behind this?
Exactly. College golf recruiting is been pretty tough. I've been fortunate to get some really good players here where we're at. But college golf recruiting, there's so many kids that are out there playing high school golf. And only like the Jordan Spieth and the select few that are playing the bigger AJGA tournaments, USGA tournaments, the Junior Worlds and stuff like that are getting looked at by the top colleges. Well, not everyone can play in those tournaments. It's just like every event. There's only a limited amount of field, you know, that can participate in a field. So how does everyone else get seen and how do they get heard? And so from the coaching aspect of it, there are certain things I like to see from a college player. So if I see players that are combined correctly and rated in certain areas, I can pick from these certain areas that I like. I may not need a kid who makes every putt right now. I may not need a kid who's shooting 65 and sixes in tournaments. But if you can move it pretty good off the tee, if you have some nice distance and your TrackMan combine is pretty good, I can show you how to score lower. On the other side, there's coaches and teams that like guys that roll it really well or are already shooting really low. And maybe they'll work on the guys on the technical part of hitting golf shots. And so we can kind of match up player and coach very well. So just like you said, is it like the high school or is it like the college, the football combines and baseball and basketball combines? Yes, it is. You know, obviously we're rating and testing different things, but it's all for the same reason, to find out about a player's strengths, what they're good at and potential as well. And then to find out some of those hidden gems as well.
Absolutely. That sounds amazing. It's taking the Moneyball concept and giving the stats so that you can compare apples to apples. I remember having a conversation with the coach at Michigan State years ago, and he talked about how it's difficult to recruit on the high school side. Plus, college teams don't have that many spaces open.
Right.
But it's difficult to recruit on the college side because you have apples to oranges. They don't all play really nice courses, and they don't all, you know, it's hard to compare them across the board.
100%. You're right. And it is hard to judge a player, you know, that's playing maybe in the Northeast versus someone that's playing over here in the Southwest. And their seasons are different. And, you know, the kids are just coming out on the East Coast right now. They're just coming out of a pretty harsh winter.
Right.
So their skills aren't going to be the same as somebody that's playing in Arizona, California, you know, in Nevada right now. And so our thing is, if we're rating them at the proper time, like I wouldn't go and do a Northeast combine, you know, in March. It's not going to do us any good. Those kids aren't going to be ready. But when we get to their spot and their level at the right time, obviously everyone's going to have their skills. So someone's short game may show up better who's particularly not scoring their best or something at the time. So,
right.
And then, you know, it, like I said, it allows a good player to coach matchup as well. And it gives everyone their rating at every different pillar that we choose to categorize.
While we're on this topic, what kind of advice would you give to parents who have kids who are in high school that love to play the game, that want to compete?
Right.
What kind of advice would you give to parents about prepping their kid to play college ball, or how they can get into playing college ball?
Awesome. Come to U.S. College Golf Combines. So U.S. Golf Combines .com is actually going to go live next week. At the end of the week, we're going to go live.
So give me a date on that, because this is going to be broadcast, you know, once we publish this show, it may have been already live.
So
approximately.
So it will be April 30th. The website's going to go live and we can start signing up.
2015. Okay.
Yep, 2015. And from there, but you know what? Play as much competition as you can play. It doesn't matter what the tournament is, what the name of it is, who's the sponsor of it, where it's at. The main thing is to, just like we talked about with nerves earlier, the more you're in that situation, the less you're going to feel those nerves.
Right.
And the more competition you can play, the better. One thing I hear a lot, I work with a lot of really good junior and high school players as well, is I'm going to wait till I'm playing a little bit better. I'm going to wait till I'm swinging better. I'm going to wait till I'm putting better to get in that tournament. Well, we don't know how we're going to swing it, how we're going to hit it, and how we're going to chip it until we get into the tournament. You may get there and find out that you're a great tournament player, not a good practicer. I have a kid who, on my team right now, who's the number two player in the country, who does not qualify well. Well, he's gotten a couple sponsor pick or coaches picks by me, and the kid's gone out and played extremely well in tournaments. So, you know, there's just like we said, there's gamers. Mm-hmm. And so our thing is to make sure that the gamers are found, and how you're going to be found as a gamer is getting the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never won a golf tournament on a practice tee.
Oh, I have.
Sorry.
Many.
Actually, I've won a couple U.S. Opens and Masters on a practice green.
Yeah.
None on the range.
It made me think of something. Oh, the difference between high school golf and junior golf programs.
Right. Right.
And does that help a college recruiter if they're playing, you know, junior golf versus playing high school golf?
I would say college recruiters are looking more at the junior golf tournaments, because they're multiple day tournaments. They're 18 hole tournaments a day. A lot of high school matches are 9-hole matches.
Mm.
You know, so
and they're not always on the best courses, right?
And they're not always on the best golf courses. And, you know, it's but we do look at those as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I go out to the state high school tournament every year and do a lot of recruiting there for my team. But and I think a lot of college coaches do as well. But they're also looking at some of the AJGA, the local junior tours that are playing. Like here in Arizona, we have the Junior Golf Association of Arizona. And they have the Desert Junior Tour and the Rocky Mountain Junior Tour and all these different junior tours that are going on. So, you know, my thing is, how much tournament golf are you playing, first of all? And which tells me a couple things, you know, that's your commitment to this game. And then, you know, what are you shooting in these tournaments? How are you placing? How are you bouncing back from poor rounds? I'm not always looking at your best rounds. I'm looking back. How are you bouncing back after rounds, your progression from year to year? And so, the only way for me to measure that, unless you are getting combined by U.S. Golf Combine or I'm there watching you practice every day, is the only measurement I have is your tournament scores. So mm-hmm. as much competition as you can play.
You said your team is number one in the nation. Is that on not on a D1, D2, it's community college?
National Junior College. Yep, the NJCAA.
Okay.
So NJCAA, we're number one team in the country. Yeah, it's fun. We've had some success against some D1 schools.
I
think Arizona State right now is number two D1 team in the country, and we clipped them earlier in the fall in a tournament. So
that's
we've
gotta
played.
Feel good.
Oh, it's awesome! It's awesome. I would take my five junior college guys right now and play any NCAA Division I tournament in the country, and know that we are not only going to compete but would have a chance to win. To say that we're going to win every tournament at the D1 level would be silly. But I tell you what, these guys can flat play, and it is it's fun.
Awesome.
It's a pleasure coaching them. Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
How does team scoring work like that?
So in our conference in junior college, we play six players, count the four lowest scorers, in our regional tournament, which is next Thursday through Sunday. It is five players, count four, And at the national championship in May in Alabama, it's going to be 5-4. So every day you play five players and your low four scores is your team total.
I'm going to go back. We're talking about 21-year-olds here, and my favorite line actually of the day at the very end when he won, Jim Nance was saying, "Well, you know, next month, you know, if he was back in Texas, he would be graduating next month, but he doesn't have to because he got his master's."
That's right.
It was a great line. But do you see kids that you go, okay, this kid's going to be able to compete on a professional level?
Yeah, definitely. All the time. I've got, you know, goodness, three or four or five on my team that I think are going to be playing professional golf, you know, at some level. PGA Tour, I'd love to see them there.
Yeah.
Do they have the talent and ability? Definitely. I mean, this is a very talented group. But you got to think, we're a junior college team. I was fortunate enough to win an NCAA championship at Pepperdine in 97. And I would think that this team here is better than our team that won an NCAA championship. There's so many guys. I mean, just to think that Jordan Spieth, I met Jordan the first time. I believe he was maybe 18 or 19. He got an exemption into the Northern Trust Open when he was at Texas. And I got an exemption to play in as well. And the kid was polished. I mean, he looked like a tour veteran at that age. Hmm. And so, you know, he's not your typical 21-year-old kid right now. I mean, this kid, the maturity that he has and his golf awareness and knowledge is just beyond his years. And it's pretty fun to see. So to think that he could have been playing next month NCAA championships is scary. I mean, I wouldn't want to run against him.
Wait a minute. He's not eligible to do
no,
that.
He could have been. He stayed in college, right?
Yeah. No, he can't do that. He's not an amateur anymore.
No.
Far from being an amateur now.
But if he, you know, like I said, he could have been playing that.
Wow.
You know, come a month, and that would have been, like I said, I wouldn't have wanted to run across him at that point.
And wasn't when Tiger was that age, wasn't he held back? Didn't his dad hold him back from playing on an upper level? He's like, just take one stage at a time. Let's not rush things.
He did. Yep. And I tell people all the time, I see high school kids that want to jump right to the pro ranks right off the bat.
And we're not talking about basketball.
Right. We're talking about golf here. And I'm like, guys, if Tiger went to college for a couple of years, yeah, you should probably go to college for a couple. Now, are there exceptions to the rule? Yeah. Over in Europe, a lot of the guys don't go to college, like the Rory McIlroys and stuff like that. But at the same time, a lot of them do. You know, you got Adam Scott who did. You know, he went to UNLV for a few years. So, you know, there's kind of a blueprint-ish of how to get there, and college golf gets you acclimated to play in bigger venues with the best players all the time, and like I said, it was, you know, the guys that are the most successful did it for a little while at the college level and won NCAA championships. Tiger won as well, and Jordan won, and they moved up with the confidence and ability to be successful at the next level.
You said a moment ago that they have the talent and the ability.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, they have talent and ability, but ... obviously there's a whole lot of maturity that is required. There's a whole lot of presence. There's a whole lot of self-knowledge that you have to succeed at golf at that level. So talent and ability, is that just enough, or what separates the ones who can from that can't on a competitive level?
There's a couple of things. This right here, your heart, you mm-hmm. can't measure heart and your mind up here. And so what Jordan Spieth is really good at is focusing and staying in the present and not being afraid of big situations. And so the awareness level that he has out there is awesome.
When you say awareness, you're not talking about the competition. You're talking about awareness of
self.
Of self on the
awareness
course.
Awareness of self. His self-awareness, his awareness of what he does at certain instances. I have tons of people who tell me they draw the ball, and coming down the hardest of situations, the ball goes right. And I sit there and go, your awareness and our reality is a little different here, right? If we miss the ball right all the time coming down the stretch and we're aiming right, we've got a disconnect. And so, there's the little intangibles that separate the good from the greats. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the greats, exactly what is it? It's being able to perform at your best in the most important time. Okay. So, myself, for an example, I was a very good high school player. I was a collegiate All-American. I won NCAAs. I played on the PGA Tour. I played on the Web.com Tour. I won 28 professional events. But what was it that I didn't do at the right time that a Jordan Spieth or a Tiger Woods does do? You know, why were they winning major champs? Do those guys hit the ball better than I do? No. Do they chip it and putt it better than I do? No. But there's a little intangibles that the greats, the Jack Nicklauses, the Arnold Palmers, the Lee Trevinos, those guys that we see and are the greats of the game do better than the 30 to 125 on the money list guys, right? It has nothing to do with physical ability, has nothing to do with work ethic. You can't tell me that the 24 guy on the money list works harder than the 25 guy on the money list. Or the 5 guy on the money list works harder than the 50 guy on the money list. No, there are intangibles that are immeasurable that helps you get to that level. And a lot of it, like I said, is repetition. I think Jordan's very successful because he's been playing a lot of high-level golf for a long time, a lot of tournament golf for a long time. And putting yourself in that position as much as you can helps you be successful. And so finding out yourself, hey, this is what I do when I'm in this situation. Now I'm going to own up to that. Once I found out what my miss really was coming down the stretch, I got to plan and kind of go into my process a little bit deeper and attack those things so I could be successful in that and cherish those moments instead of being afraid of them and being, like the first question, being nervous about it, right? I had more anticipation than fear. And so that's where the nerves get, you know, they can help you or hurt you at that same point. So, you know, that's a great question that you asked right there is, you know, the .. you know, what's going to be the commitment to these kids when they come out of college? You know, if they sign a big contract, we see that, I think a lot of players right now, and not to bring up a touchy subject, learned from Tiger's mistake. Okay. They learn that, hey, we can't lead this type of lifestyle that is available to us. Right? Because who was the great superstar before Tiger out there? Oh, wait. Right? There wasn't one. But Tiger set a blueprint of like, this Jack. Is what can happen now. Yeah, exactly. Right? And there was no social media and there wasn't all these different, you know, distractions. I'm sure that tons
and there
of
wasn't 24-hour
Tiger,
sports channels and golf right? channels.
Exactly. And there weren't people tweeting when they saw you with a certain. I mean, I'm sure that Tiger is not the first person to have transgressions ever that had played golf, right?
Probably not.
And that may not be the most popular thing to say, but it's true. And
professional athlete, there are people following.
Exactly. And so so the kids, I think Jordan Spieth has really learned, hey, this is the type of lifestyle that I want to lead to be successful, and he's doing it. And he's got a good camp around him, and he's got a good family around him, and he has people around him that are taking care of him and not trying to use him. And so, you know, I think he's got a lot of the he's got a lot of the tools in place to be very successful in this game for a long time.
That's interesting because it makes me think that is Tiger's legacy, right? Rory and Jordan. I mean, is you know, what did he bring to golf? Yeah, he brought a moment of amazing excellence, but what did he leave for the long term? Maybe it's the next generation of golfers and what he's taught them. That's a really interesting point that you have.
Yeah.
Because it seems like right now, more than ever, on the professional level, there's a lot of young people playing and competing and succeeding.
Yeah. That new breed's coming up.
Right.
I mean, you know, I mean, Rory made a comment last year about Phil and Tiger being on their back nine. You know, they're on the back nine of their careers. I'm like, wow, that's deep.
That's the same age as me.
Yeah. I'm 6 months older than Tiger. It's like, that means I'm done. I've already made the turn. I'm on the 19th hole right now.
I talk about being in the back nine of life. So you still got some time.
So, you know, it's amazing that, you know, these young guys that are coming up are so good and so strong. And, you know, Patrick Reed, what he's bringing to this game is awesome. And obviously Jordan Spieth, and we see these guys that are just these young guns that are out there every week. And guess what? They're not afraid of Tiger. And I think the generation before Tiger, well, the guys that are, yeah, you know, 43, 44 that we played a little bit before Tiger and the guys that came out with him had that fear factor. We've been stung by Tiger for 20 years and it hurts. It's like, goodness gracious. And he's only getting better. Well, the guys behind him never got stung by Tiger before. Right. And so they come right out there like, Tiger, yeah, who? Oh, yeah, we know, right, Tiger's. We saw you on TV apologizing for getting caught, you know, doing that. Yeah, and now you're chili dipping it and you can't get it on the green at TPC Scottsdale. And, you know, it's like that fear. They don't have that fear factor. They don't have those scars. They don't have the scar tissue of Tiger.
Well, Tiger had this intimidation factor, too, when he was at his prime that everyone was talking about from, you know, from columnists to, I mean, everybody, even if they weren't into golf, they were talking about his intimidation factor. He walked on the course and everybody was like, oh, boy, this is not going to be fun.
I sat in a room with a room full of tour players, all tour winners, multiple winners. And we were talking about Tiger, I think this was about 2010 or so, 2009. And everyone talked about, I said, what's the difference? Because we all grew up playing against Tiger and we've beaten him and he's beaten us obviously more than we beat him. But he was gettable. And they were like, Tiger is a different person now. He's almost godlike on a golf course. They're like, he floats around a golf course. You can be hitting balls and you'll feel him 50 yards behind you hitting balls. And you'll feel him walking up, just that presence. Right now, Tiger does not have that same presence out there.
So, I was just going to ask you, you've played against him, you've coached. Mm-hmm. Can you watch him on TV and know, like, okay, this putt's not going in or he's not? I mean, can you just feel it from him? You get a sense from him that it's not there?
I saw him play at TPC Scottsdale this year.
You did.
And I almost cried. I mean, it was that sad to see the best player who's ever picked up a golf club not be able to chip a ball onto the green from 5 yards off the green, right? I mean, I'm not talking about not chipping it in, what I'm used to seeing him doing, or not chipping it to a foot. He couldn't get a ball on the green, right? He's still taking four irons and trying to roll it up. And, you know, he kind of bought into all this mess about changing his wrist patterns or whatever that means, and glutes being activated and deactivated, not firing. And, it was sad to see, because I was there with a bunch of guys that play on tour and we're watching, like, we don't know what's going on. And it was a sad day, I think, for golf more than anything, just because being a fan of the game and being able to play against and be around the best players ever, to see the best player ever go through that type of struggle is like, wow. You know, what was hard was like, that could happen to me at any time. And then it was beautiful to watch him chipping and pitching the ball the way he did at the Masters. And see, you know, the last day he stumbled a little bit. But I had no idea. I said, you know, with Tiger, you're going to get anything. He could have came out and gave a Jordan Spieth performance and won by, you know, 4, 5, 6 shots. Or he could have shot 88, 92.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so to see him come out and get it out of the way. And I just wanted him to miss number one green and watch him chip it, like chip it on the green and then let's breathe. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he played some good rounds there in the middle and got himself, you know, somewhat in contention. Jordan kind of left the field
early.
But, early. He got himself in contention and I think that's good for the game. Tell you the truth, this game, as great as Jordan Spieth going to be for the game, as great as Rory McIlroy is going to be for this game. The game's in good hands right now, but this game needs Tiger.
Well, you know, I've recently received an email from a listener saying, stop talking about Tiger already. Let's focus on what's going on. Because there is a youth movement that is happening. Jordan and Rory are the future of the game at that level.
Right.
And
right.
Tiger is not it. And so maybe we put too much emphasis on what was and hoping it's going to come back, because it, you know, the fact is, watching Tiger this past week, and I commented to a couple of people, I don't remember Tiger having four good rounds on a weekend. I mean, he
right.
has not put four good rounds together in a long time.
Right.
So, you know, you can always talk about the 1950s Yankees, you know, about dominating the sport, but they're not coming back either.
Right.
So we do have to look at the future of the game, and you're working directly with these young kids. You think and you see firsthand that's where it's going.
Definitely. I mean, you know, that was, I don't think we could have had a better champion than Jordan. Obviously, if Tiger would have won, the golf industry would have exploded. I mean, people don't understand that Tiger feeds us all in the golf industry. Mm-hmm. Okay. If Tiger had to bow out because he couldn't chip a ball in the green, this $2 million performance center in our hair right now would be struggling. Mm. I mean, he gives, because he's going to bring, people want to watch Tiger either fail or succeed. But either way, you want to watch him.
He's a love hate.
Yeah. Yeah. And so either way, you're anticipating watching him play. Jordan was awesome because he won by a lot on Saturday and Sunday, right? And so people tuned in on Thursday to watch Tiger. Jordan took that audience away from them.
Great.
Right? He took the audience, and he was like, hey, this is my audience. And that was awesome. And Rory, you know, didn't quite live up to what he was, you know, touted to do, but I mean, you know, great player, unbelievable player. So
right, and obviously that course does not complement his game.
Right. So
clearly, he struggles there.
And so,
but really, you know, this concept of Tiger being the Messiah for golf, it's like a bunch of 60-year-old. Consultants talking about when they had their big day in business and they're waiting for it to come back. It's like, folks, if you're not embracing the internet and Twitter and Periscope and Facebook, if you're not embracing that in the way you do business now, forget about it.
It's because like Al Bundy talking about his high school, you know, in high school, I threw for 5 touchdowns in the state, you know, championship game. Yeah.
And that was your moment.
Yep.
And so hopefully is Jordan, you know, we've always talked about, is Rory the next Tiger? Is Rory, you know, we keep waiting for it to happen, and it kind of does. And he, you know, he was on the verge of a career grand slam, and that. But is Jordan the next Tiger? I mean, because we had, you know, I mean, we it's big, you know, Arnie and Jack and Tiger. You know, you had there are certain players for each generation that just carry the generation, and Tiger had his. But he fell from grace so hard. It's such a shame. But now we got to look to the future again. And is Jordan, I personally think because he, and this is going to sound terrible, because he's an American, it may be much bigger because the advertisers are going to clomp onto that. Plus his, you know, adorableness, his movie star looks, he's just, you know, he's just a clean looking kid, you know, that could be an advertising boom.
He is. And he's a great kid. And I think he's done everything the right way. And, you know, been getting to know a lot of people around his camp lately. And the kid's a star, and he's been for a long time. And I think the people around him know it, but they haven't kind of filled his head with all the hoopla. But at the same time, I think that Jordan Spieth being American is huge. It is big for the game. Because guess what? To be honest, no one really tunes into the Golf Channel to watch Rory McIlroy that much.
Mm-mm.
Sorry. Unless there's some Americans in the field that are playing well and he's doing everything. Rory's got a lot of swag, right? But Rory doesn't show up all the time.
I don't think he's got the kind of, and is it the word charisma, what I'm looking for, that Tiger had, that there was something about him that just drew you to the screen. It just sucked you in, that Tiger, whether he was on the course or not, right? And that's, you know, is that what we're always looking for the next one.
I think it's pretty unfair to put the next Tiger on anybody. Including
absolutely,
Tiger's been the best in the world since at his respective level since we were 5 years old. And when he was, you know, 13 years old, he was the best junior player in the world. So that was everyone under 18. And when he was in college, he was the best player in the world. I mean, I think Norman was ranked number one in the world, but you know, Tiger went through a stretch in college where he was shooting 63s and fours and winning NCAA championship. Tiger shot 80 the last round of NCAAs and won. Okay, that's how much he had blown us away at the honors course.
Wow.
I was right there, and I was a recipient of that whooping that he gave everybody as well. And And I think I played with Robert Floyd that week, Raymond's son, and Raymond followed us and said, if this was a tour event this week, Tiger would win by about 8. Okay. And so, you know, to put that on anybody, I don't know is fair, because they are looking for the next Tiger. How about Jordan be the first Jordan Spieth? You know,
how do you sell that?
Yeah. And so I tell
really,
you what,
how do you sell that?
I'll tell you what, Under Armour, these people at the top of these companies know what they're doing. I mean, mm-hmm. they signed Tiger for $60 million and he turns into, you know, the whole game. And Under Armour, you know, does this big contract with Jordan, and they did a great job. They did an unbelievable job. And so, you know, obviously they know what they're picking and they know what they're looking for. And these guys are just, you know, Nike signs a big contract with Rory and he becomes the number one player in the world. It's like these guys are, they know something we don't, right?
Oh my God.
I need to go over there and, you know, have these guys do my lottery numbers or something like that. But,
I have one more question and then we're going to take a break. Because you probably have a better sense of this than I do, but are players wearing spikes anymore?
So let me give you the good answer here. I have a really great relationship with Soft Spikes, and they do their R&D out of our performance center. So no, Soft Spikes company by Pride Sports is the only way to go. With that being said, yeah, there's some people that still wear nails. Reasons why we probably don't need to. You don't need spikes anymore. If you have to have spikes to hold your foot, your balance, probably swing it too hard.
Good tip. That's an excellent point. I was blown away seeing Keegan Bradley wearing high top Air Jordans.
Those are hideous. Those are awful.
Were there some sort of grip on that? I mean, those weren't regular basketball shoes, were they?
It's that Air Jordan golf shoe. And I guess he's going to release it or, yeah. And Keegan's wearing them. Those are brutal.
I was like blown away. I'm like, I kept rewinding going, oh my God, they really are Air Jordan high tops.
That's nuts.
That's crazy.
That's his buddy. So he's making a shoe for him, you know, and yada, yada, yada. But, I don't know.
All right, listen, I'm going to make a couple of announcements. When we come back, can you give us a tip, and we'll record it on video so that we can share it with everybody too.
Awesome.
So I just returned from my weekend trip down to Tucson, Arizona. Just flew right over Andy, who's in Scottsdale. And I'm happy to report that I have found a very affordable and really nice golf alternative to Scottsdale. Same state, a little bit cooler weather, a little higher altitude. And the pricing is, well, for one round, for one person to play golf in Scottsdale, our foursome paid the same price. Go figure that one, okay? We played 3 courses, and next week we're going to meet Spencer Cody of Say Wallow Golf Course, who I shot a short video tip as well on how to work on your distance in putting, and it worked for me almost immediately. And I had promoted that I was going to do that interview via Periscope, that new app on Twitter where you can see the entire interview live. While, you know, right there on your phone. But I forgot. We got in the car as we were leaving. I went, I knew there was something I forgot. I was supposed to broadcast it on Periscope, and I didn't. And then I had another interview scheduled. I was going to do one with Pete Huber on his method of teaching called Pure Impact Golf, but he had to postpone to a later date. So I will get him on the show, but I did get 10 minutes with him and shot another video tip, this one on Pure Impact and how to make and how to improve your contact with the ball. So there are a couple of pretty fun videos that I posted on the Facebook Golf Smarter page. So please check those out. All right, Andy, thanks so much for waiting. I've got you both on video and audio now, and you're going to provide us with a little tip that we're going to be able to share at the end of the podcast, but it's also going to be on our Golf Smarter TV YouTube channel.
Perfect. This tip is called Follow the Handle. A lot's been said about short game lately with Tiger's troubles and making good contact and hitting thin shots and heavy shots around the green. It all can be handled in setup. and knowing where your center of gravity is. If you know that your center of gravity is underneath your chin, your hands are going to fall back underneath your chin at impact. What happens is people try and hit golf shots low, and they get their hands forward. We've all seen that guy before. And then when you come back, if you try to hit a golf shot and keep your hands forward at impact, you would bottom out back here and lift the ball. And a lot of players do that. They chunk it or they hit the ball thin. So they're trying to hit it low. If they come back and their hands fall underneath their chin, the ball goes high and they go, well, I was trying to hit that low. So I always say follow the handle. If I want to hit a golf shot low, I'm going to hit three shots for us. I'm going to hit a low chip shot, a medium chip shot, medium trajectory, and a higher pitch shot. And all I'm going to do is follow the handle. So when I say that is I'm going to make sure that my hands and the handle fall underneath my chin. If I want to have this club de-lofted, I'm going to follow the handle. So now the handle's underneath my chin again. So if I make contact, the ball will go low. We'll hit it nice and crisp, and we still make contact with our hands being consistently under our handle, which is underneath our chin, our center of gravity. If I want to hit it medium, I set up here again. The shaft is still leaning, but not as much. The handle's underneath our chin, and we make a regular chip shot. The ball goes just a little bit higher. If we want to hit the ball a little higher, what we do is we start to turn. So if I want to add some more loft to it, I lean the shaft back. I turn, so now the club is right underneath my center of gravity again. I'm a little more open to my target. Make the same swing, and we hit a nice, high, softer shot. So the main thing is making sure that wherever golf shot we want to have, if we want to hit it low, we're going to have the club leaning towards our target, but we're going to follow the handle here. If it's medium, we're going to be right here. And if it's back, we're going to have the handle underneath the center of gravity. It's going to help you with contact.